Under the skin. Hello, listeners. Welcome to Under the Scales. This is Tom. I didn't know what to expect exactly when I interviewed the guitarist of a Phish cover band. I mean, I would essentially be talking to the guy who's playing the role of Trey in the band. And I know from years of not only friendship, but of also being a Phish fan, that nothing that Trey does artistically, and by extension, nothing that Phish does, happens by chance. I'm not talking about improvisational occurrences. I'm talking about the labor and the thought and agonizing, the sheer amount of planning that goes into everything that Phish does. I mean, they even practice improvising for hours on end, so I guess that really isn't left to chance either. So here I'm about to interview Andy Greenberg, and on one hand I was thinking, I guess a very proficient band could certainly learn and play Phish songs, but wouldn't it take some deeper thinking to really pull off Phish with any authenticity? Kind of to really pay tribute to all the thinking that went into the music. So do you see why I was a little worried before talking to Andy? Not worried, but uncertain, I guess is a better word. Well, with no further ado, I'll begin the podcast. So, with my mind whirling, RJ, my friend you guys might recognize from the Helping Friendly podcast, and I begin to interview Andy Greenberg, guitarist for Runaway Gin. I was happy to find that Andy's mind was whirling too, in a delightfully deep way. Oh, also because I don't want to confuse anyone, the first two musical clips I play are Twist and Ghost, and that's Phish playing them, because we're talking about particular eras of their playing. The remaining music in the podcast is Runaway Gin. Enjoy. All right, so the Under the Scales studio has moved south to Baltimore, and I'm really excited to be seeing Runaway Gin tonight. Runaway Gin is a Phish cover band, and I'm sitting here with Andy Greenberg, the suitably named Andy Greenberg, I should say, who's the guitarist for Runaway Gin. And I'm also very happy to have my sister podcast co-host, RJ B, here. Hey, RJ.
Hey, Tom. Thanks for having me back.
Absolutely. And let's say hello to Andy Greenberg. Hey, man, how are you?
Hey, I'm great. Fresh off the road.
Yeah, this is really cool. So we're in the 8x10 Club in Baltimore, and you guys are about to go on in a few hours.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And you just came from Richmond, was it?
Right, Richmond last night.
So something I've learned about you, just a tiny bit of studying, made me realize you guys play a lot of shows.
Yeah, absolutely. We played like over 220 shows now. I think our first year that we started was 2014, I don't remember how many we played. 2015, we played like 87. And then 2016, I think we played like 70 or something like that.
Wow. Like, so there's almost no way around it but to say that this is almost a full-time gig.
Yeah, for us, I mean, I play in a Beck tribute, and I play in a Hall & Oates tribute sometimes, and I play in a couple other random bands, but for the most part, this is my primary band, and Fitz as well. I think definitely Pope, the drummer, John Pope, it's his primary as well. Bobby's a professional musician, so he plays in like 50 bands, though. So,
really?
Yeah.
And where are you guys centered?
Charleston, South Carolina.
Okay, so he would play in bands there, but not going on tour, just sort of local?
We're really the only band that he plays with that goes on the road a whole lot. He does a lot of wedding gigs, and he plays every Wednesday in a Grateful Dead tribute called The Reckoning, which plays at the Poorhouse every Wednesday. It's a weekly residency kind of thing.
So kind of clue me in a little bit, because as far as tribute bands go, I'm not super duper familiar with them,
sure.
Having really just seen three in my life Dark Star Orchestra gigs. And I was like, the first two, I was kind of tuned out, not really, I couldn't really attach to it. And then the last one, I got it big time. And the reason I got it is because they duplicate a concert in its entirety, as you know.
Right.
And that particular concert happened to be Princeton, New Jersey. And that's where I live. And that's where we saw them. And that, of course, was the concert that they were doing. It was a famous concert.
Oh, yeah.
From the 70s.
Definitely.
Where Pigpen kind of does a famous rant and all that stuff. I was expecting it, and I knew it all. So once I was familiar and kind of understood it, then I got it. And then I'm like, wow, this is a great, great thing. But so Phish Tribute, you're a little bit different. You don't duplicate concerts, do you?
No, we're definitely not like Dark Star Orchestra. We play Phish songs, obviously, songs written by Phish, and then songs that Phish covers. And that's kind of the parameters for what we select. And then when it comes down to a show, I just kind of write set lists based on what seems like it would be a good set list, and then we usually change it on the stage. Mm-hmm. Like last night, for example, our second set, I don't think we played one song that was on the set list, but the rest of them were all just songs that people were telling us to play during set break and at the beginning of the show. So
really, so your guys' repertoire, do you know how many songs you have in it ready to go?
I think probably like 132 right now.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, you sent me some great music ahead of time. Plus, I found some videos and stuff online. And you do have very faithful reproductions. The Reba you sent me was amazing.
Oh, thank you so much.
You enjoy myself. We're definitely going to play those on this podcast.
Oh, cool.
A little later. But first, I want to talk to sort of the mechanics, how this happens and stuff. And I know RJ has some questions, yeah. And we're ready to rock.
Yeah. Well, Andy, you just mentioned 132 songs. So one thing that's interesting to me is just how you have, so Fish has hundreds, right? You're constantly learning.
Oh yeah.
Existing songs, and then they're like prolifically, you know, still making new music. How do you guys, Definitely. How do you work in the new tunes versus existing? Is it just sort of what you feel like working in?
Yeah, the algorithms for how we add things changes. It's constantly changing. I think when we first started, I was trying to just get a lot of songs in there that I wanted to play, and then it kind of changed to what songs do people want to play, and now we're sort of at this phase of what songs do the other guys in the band want to play.
Nice.
So like, I don't know if, I guess nobody was really very assertive early on. Mm-hmm. Well, Bobby was a little bit, but for the most part, John and John, the Johns were not as assertive. And so more recently it's like, okay, what songs do you guys want to play? So now the three most recent ones that we've learned were selected by them. In regards to new songs, I go to a lot of Fish shows, so I don't want to go out there and learn a new Fish song very shortly after Fish plays it, because I feel like for some reason that's not what we're supposed to be doing. Mm-hmm. It feels like at that point it's still developing to mm-hmm. such a large degree that like for us to go in there and try and do something with it different just doesn't seem, you know, the right thing to do.
In a way, the word tribute kind of implies the word history is baked into tribute somehow.
Absolutely.
I'm not positive if that's correct. But in a way, it seems like it is, and maybe for that reason you sort of steer away from the new stuff because it's kind of not really become a tradition yet.
I think so. I think that's correct. I think maybe if Fish was like, we don't want to be, I don't know if they've said that or people are like, you know, they don't want to become a nostalgia act, so they add new material. So it's like we're sort of like, okay, we'll try and go for more of the nostalgia act thing, and like, you know, we'll wait, and like we do add new songs, like we know a couple from Fuego now, and I mean, like, don't get me wrong, I love the new material, all of it, and so it's we actually have one song off the newest album, Big Boat, that we were gonna play for the first time last night, but we ended up not playing it for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. But we'll play it real soon.
We officially request that one.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
we request it.
Okay. Well, it's
it's been playing in all of our cars.
Yeah, and this song is probably one of the more prominent ones from that. And
we're gonna be able to guess if you tell us even a little bit more about it.
Yeah, that's probably all you need to know. But so we just kind of try and stay away from it. I think it's kind of like a respect thing, and the same thing. Like we try not to play when they're playing. Because we're like, if Fish is playing, I personally like to be at the show. And if I can't make it to the show for some reason, that's another thing. But like, I just feel like I'd rather, you know, couch tour it or whatever. Like, I'm not really wanting to like pull away from the Fish experience for this, but rather not really augment, but try, whenever Fish is not playing, it's like, what are we supposed to do?
So is that kind of part of your sort of business plan, is like in the down times between Fish shows, you supply a place to go for Fish fans that need their fix?
Our business plan, if like looking at it as business, and I don't think we really started out looking at it as business and still don't to some degree, but we were, and this goes to the way that the whole thing started, there's a venue in Charleston called The Poor House, which I was mentioning Bobby plays there every Wednesday in the Grateful Dead tribute. So they have this Wednesday night Dead on the Deck thing that's been going for years and years. And just wildly successful. There's hundreds of people there every Wednesday, and it's like the night, you know what I mean? It's better, in my opinion, than like, you know, Fridays and Saturday nights. So way back when I went to the Poorhouse and I was playing in a band that was an original band and did a little bit of covers. And I was like, you know, we want to play at the Poorhouse because it's a great venue. And he was like, just kind of like, all right, whatever. And I was like, you know, we play some Fish stuff. And he's like, okay. So eventually he was like, I'm thinking about trying to start a Fish thing on a day, like kind of like the Grateful Dead thing. And I think from his business perspective, it was like, you know, we've got these Grateful Dead people that are coming to the venue. We can try and bring in, you know, new faces that are not necessarily into the Dead that are into Fish and kind of crossbreed. And so he said, you know, is this something that you'd like to do? And a good friend of mine, Will Ames, that I grew up with, we were originally, you know, put in charge of putting this all together. And it just kept falling apart. Like, we tried to do it for like a year and a half. And then right when we were about to do it, like, somebody would drop out. And finally we got Fitz, who's the keyboard player for this band,
right.
After our keyboard player, who is actually the keyboard player for the Wednesday Night Grateful Dead band. And so Fitz started playing with us. And
it's not that easy to find people that can play all this stuff.
It really isn't. I mean, that's the hardest part about it. Like, when we're looking for a sub or something like that, early on in the project, we could get a sub on an instrument, but nowadays we're like, we don't really want to do it at all because there's so many things that we've talked about and that we all know that when we get up there with other people that don't know those things, we're all just kind of like, what are we doing? Like,
oh, you mean when there's a new guy, the vibe is off?
Totally.
I would expect that certainly, like, maybe he could sort of struggle through the composed parts.
Right.
But when you guys jam, that must be like this language that you develop as a band.
Oh yeah, that actually playing with guys that aren't as familiar with the composed stuff is sort of a little bit more of a breath of fresh air. Like, that part works well, but the composed stuff, uh-huh. I mean, even just, because me especially, is just very like detailed about specific stuff with the forms, and this vocal part's got to be there. If one background vocal's not there, like, I'm pretty much like upset. I'm just what is this?
You know what I mean? Oh, right, of course. Because it's pretty exacting, and so that could throw you off your game with...
Oh, totally.
Yeah, someone sings the wrong harmony, for example.
Yeah, and I've just seen Fish so many times that, like, if I hear something off, sometimes I can't even tell you what it is. I'm just like, something feels funny now, and it's making me uncomfortable, and I don't know what it is.
Right.
And so that's something that I have to kind of deal with and struggle with.
that's interesting. I have more along this line if you want to keep going this way. So what I was going to ask you next is, as guitarist, and you were sort of touching on this, now you're kind of Trey in a way, you're filling those shoes.
Right.
So I have technical questions about your guitar, but I want to kind of ask you more because we were touching on the band stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Trey must, you know, just as a nightly exercise when you're on stage, it's, you know, you arrive with a repertoire of music, but isn't a lot of it letting go?
Oh, absolutely.
And are you guys able to do that? Like,
yeah, absolutely.
I mean, your jams are amazing, but they're not Fish by any means.
Oh, yeah, and thank you. There's you know, people on the internet talk about, and RJ and I on the podcast before, and I'm sure you know the type 1 and type 2 jams.
Yeah.
So type 1 meaning it's something that's playing within a defined set of chord changes.
You can still tell it's the original song.
Right.
And type 2 being it's departed.
Totally, totally. And I think going into the type 2 part is the most uncomfortable thing that you can do. It really feels like you're jumping, and we talked about this
before. The man who stepped into yesterday.
It feels like the man who stepped into the elevator shaft. Like, you're just kind of free falling, and you're like, wait a minute, does this suck? I don't know. And it's so subjective at that point.
But you don't all drop into type 2 like at once, do you?
I mean, sometimes, not like on a dime.
Because isn't it like more like... Like, there's sort of a thing going, and all of a sudden some guy gets an idea. And,
Somebody. And it's supposed to bleed like that. I mean, we've done the exercises a little bit, which I think can lead to that kind of type 2 jamming where, you know, one person starts, you know, an idea, and the other guy slowly sort of morph into that idea from the other thing, and it's sort of like a passing of the baton around the circle. And that's a beautiful way to do it. And I think that when we first started, that was kind of how it seemed like we were innately and naturally trying to do that. But now sometimes we just kind of fall into something, and it's like it happens a little bit faster.
You can feel it.
It did. Yeah. And I think that does have to do with what you said, letting go, because when you're going around the circle doing that exercise, there is a certain amount of control that you're exercising over the jam. And I think that if everybody's completely playing by ear and everybody's listening to everybody else, and nobody's actually steering the ship. It's like, I think Mike said this once, like the analogy of your hands on the Ouija board and you're not pushing down hard enough and it's sort of moving on its own. Like, I think that's the ideal thing.
That's, and you,
you know, usually after something like that happens, we don't remember anything, you know, and that's sort of a way to gauge it for me. It's like, if part of my brain is forming memories while we're playing, uh-huh, I'm probably thinking too much, you know.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, that is good. Andy, I've seen you guys a bunch, and your sound. Do you try to emulate specific sounds in terms of era, like, you know, based on what you're playing or based on the equipment? Do you guys, or do you just kind of have a static, not static, but, you know, more of a standard approach with equipment and sound? Do you sometimes try to sound like 2002, 2000, or 2003, sometimes 2009 onward, or does it not get that detailed?
I mean, I think I could probably go back and be like, that kind of sounds like this, or that kind of mm-hmm. sounds like this. But for me personally, and I mean, I think everybody in the band would probably give you a different answer. For me, it's just kind of like what seems like the right thing to do, mm-hmm. and that may be derived from what other people are doing. If it sounds in the context of something, you know, that may have sounded like 93 or 94, I may subconsciously try and do something out of memory that's more like that, mm-hmm. just because I guess the aesthetic that I think of Phish as, you know, as it changes so much yeah. each year, and I definitely, you know, can think of distinct ways that each member of the band has played over time, but it's never intentional. I don't think we've ever gone out and said like, hey, let's do a, you know, 93 style Mike song versus a modern yeah. style, except that we changed like the actual form of it, because there were, in some songs, forms changed, and we have done that. Like, we've
that second jam mm-hmm. or whatever.
Yeah. And then the like Twist, for example, you know, when it started out, it was like the album where the dun dun dun. Exactly, oh, right. Totally. Gone between playing Twist like the modern way and the old way,
right?
And the reason why we did that is just because we wanted to like feel that and see what it felt like to do it that way. Same thing with Ghost. Like, you know, I first Ghost I heard was, I think, Lakewood Ghost, and that was, and it didn't go like dun dun dun. It was just like dun dun. I feel mm-hmm. like that's dun dun.
Never told you the story of the ghost that I once knew and talked to, of whom I never boast. If this was my big secret, how I'd get.
You know, so we've done Ghosts like that before too, and we've kind of gone back and forth. So maybe that's, you know, that relates to that too. We have done that before, but it's not something that we usually do.
Yeah, it's interesting because I feel like when I'm watching you guys, I see different eras at different points, but I don't know if it's, yeah, it might
yeah,
just
I don't,
be...
Yeah, it's not intentional. It's probably subconscious, if anything.
Yeah. Right. Interesting.
So you guys can jump from the funk era to modern era without really thinking too much about, are we sounding right or whatever. You're just trying to get your own interpretation of the song across.
Yeah, I think so. Like, I don't really feel like constrained by any particular era of Phish.
Good.
When we're up there. I think it's really just more everything that has ever gone into my brain is somehow processes
yeah.
and then it can come out into something that may be a million different things, like, yeah. you know.
Right. So now part of that, of course, is the equipment.
Yes. And the equipment side of things, I mean, the guitar that I'm playing is not a Languedoc. I wish it was. I've been trying to get a Languedoc forever, and I even have Paul's number and address, and I still cannot do it.
You're not on the list yet.
I've written him these emails that are just like, you know, look, man. I mean, like, very, like, sentimental, like, heartfelt, like, yeah. just, and no response. which is cool.
But aren't there people out there that bought one and now need to sell it? Like, aren't there secondhand ones, or they don't appear ever?
There must be. I mean, I know one guy that got one time, and he's the guy who I bought one of my guitars from, which is an Equator guitar, and it's made by this guy in Ecuador named David Coleman. And he makes them by hand. The guitar that I have right now, or here, is, it took him like 2 years to build, and it's made out of Koa, and it's it looks like a Languedoc, but it's, the dimensions are slightly off, and it's a lot harder to play, which is why I really, really want a Languedoc, because my buddy Matt Jennings, who's the keyboard player for the Marcus King Band, I don't know if you guys have heard of them yet, they're you know, blowing up, especially in the Southeast, but all around the country now. But he brought a Languedoc to our show in Greenville, which he has. It's the 23rd Languedoc. And he was just like, have you ever seen a Languedoc? And I was like, nope. And he's like, I have one. And I was like, can I see it? And he brought it. And so I picked it up and played it for a little bit. And he just saw how excited I was. He was like, dude, you want to play it for a set? I was like, yes, please. No. And so I did. And it was like so much easier to play than my guitar. I was like,
what? It's funny you say that, because Trey, I just did an interview with Trey about guitars. Uh-huh. And one of the things he described was other guitars picking up his guitar on stage with the amps turned up. Mm. And it's just like a squealing feedback machine.
Hard to control.
And very hard to control. And other people looking at it like, what am I doing? I don't really like this very much.
Totally.
And even like producers, like I think he even had a story about Ezrin saying, you know, maybe you want to play a Strat. And Trey's like, no, I'm good.
Yeah.
Is your guitar fully hollow?
It is. And it does have the same feedback issues. I first started playing the fully hollow guitar in 2014. And like when I first got it, I mean, the learning curve is definitely steep. When I first got it, it felt like you're trying to, well, normally you play a guitar and you press down on a note and you pick it. So it's like an additive thing, but this felt like more of a subtractive thing. It was like, you're trying to, it's like the Sorcerer's Apprentice or something. You're trying to grab this broom and it's trying to get away from you and you're trying to hold it still. So like, you know, it really wears you out, but you do get used to it.
So it is a snarling beast.
Oh yeah. I mean, if you take your hands off it,
it'll make noise.
Oh yeah. So you're keeping it quiet. Yeah.
That's amazing.
It's exactly. It's a subtractive playing style. I mean,
is that a function of your amp is way too turned up? I mean, not too, but way, way turned up, or is it a normal volume?
Well, yeah, I think, I mean, my bandmates would probably tell you it's way turned up, but to me, it just seems like normal volume.
Well, I think every guitarist is
like, yeah. Does anybody want a guitar in the monitors? And everybody's like,
I do not want a guitar in the monitors.
So, yeah, I mean, the volume of it, if I turn it down quiet, or more quiet, it would not feed back like it does or sustain like it does as much.
Right.
But you could still get some pretty good sustain out of it, I think, if you get the right angles and stuff. It's weird the way the properties of the guitar are way different than any other guitar that I played before.
That's incredible. Well, you should get on the list for Languedoc. I understand it's a long list.
I don't mind waiting. Hell, I mean,
and it seems like an exclusive list. I didn't know there was trouble getting on it even.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
I didn't even know there was a list. I mean, for all I know, he's not even there anymore. I don't know.
As far as I know, well, I mean, every now and then Trey gets a new one, right?
Yeah, I guess.
Who knows? I don't know.
I'm removed. I thought maybe he didn't like me because I played a Fish Tribute or something, you know?
I'm like, dude, I have to get this. It's not fair. You know? Wow. So what's your guys' reach, you know, geographically? Where do you go?
Well, we started out in Charleston. Like I said, we started doing the Every Sunday thing back in 2012 with a band called the Buddhist Prodigies. And then eventually we founded this new band, which is Runaway Gen. And so we started playing on Sundays in Charleston. And that was really all we set out to do. And, you know, I think earlier you said something like, what was the business plan?
I regret saying that in a way.
No, like an artist, that's a silly thing to say.
Right?
I mean, like, it's actually a good question. Part of my brain is like, yes, business, let's talk about business. But I'm like, no. So from the business side of it, our goal really was just to go out there and have fun. And Fish never really plays in South Carolina very much. So there's all these people in Charleston that are Fish fans. Uh-huh. And there was no real nexus where everybody, you know, could meet. And
right.
And it became that. It became a hub for people who are Fish fans to meet each other.
Right.
And then, you know, secondarily, it was just like, you know, we're trying to get better and do this thing to entertain you while you're doing this. Like, there wasn't really any kind of intention of going on the road or anything like that.
Right.
But as soon as we started playing, I think before we even started playing, as soon as we announced it, we were getting offers from venues in North Carolina first. And we were like, well, yeah, sure, why not? So we went up there and played. And then since then, it's just, I don't think we ever, more recently we've started, you know, kind of like reaching out to venues, but originally it was all just venues that reached out to us.
That's amazing. So there's a demand for this.
Absolutely.
And that's kind of, you know, I kind of still regret the business plan.
Right.
But that's kind of why I asked, because I just sort of can't fathom, you know, a demand when Phish is touring.
Well, there really isn't one, unless it's somewhere where everybody's pissed off that they can't be at the Phish show. But if that's the case, I find that they probably don't want to see a Phish cover band anyway, because they could couch tour, or they'd be seeing another band to try and, like, you know, get their mind off the fact that Phish is playing.
Well, that said, if you came to my town, there's no way I wouldn't go.
Okay, yeah.
I mean, 100% I would go, because here's a Phish band that everyone says is good. There's no way I would miss it. Do you think you're getting some of that effect happening too?
I think
just dedicated fans coming, right?
Yeah, people come out, and I think that they come out to for the same reason, to kind of meet people, and I think it kind of does serve as a social function in communities. When we go in there, we sort of can build a scene for them, sort of a jam scene, or help build it, help kind of crystallize it. It may be sort of you know, free floating, and then as soon as we start to come back, there's the same people, and they start to become good friends, and it just kind of builds into something more than that, which is awesome. Like, because in the South, you know, where I'm from, there's not really a whole lot of unity amongst the fans, because there's not really any, other than when Phish comes to town, which is so infrequently, they just don't, you know, get around each other.
One of the last times they came to town, they went to a restaurant in Charleston, and it was kind of like there's a seafood type name to it. I don't quite remember it.
Hyman Seafood?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. And I went with a group of people, which included Speech, the guy from Arrested Development, from
like a 90s
band.
Yeah.
And we kind of took over the place, and we were singing Lean On Me and stuff.
Yeah.
And the owner came out, and he was videotaping us because we were loud and singing well. Not me included. I'm talking about
everyone
else but me. but I happened to glance down, because I moved over to be next to, like, for a photo.
Uh-huh.
And I looked down, and the plaque was Phish, the band.
Really?
Had eaten there. Yeah, it was just sort of random. Like,
and it was just right there?
Yeah. And
wow.
I took a picture of it and sent it to Trey, and I said, hey, I'm at the
Hyman's Seafood
in Charleston, and you were here too. And he texted back immediately, goes, dude, we were hungry.
Don't tell anybody from Charleston that you went.
Really? Okay.
No, I'm just kidding. That's actually good. I like it. The scallop.
It was a tourist place though, right?
Yeah, it really is. It's not somewhere that locals go a whole lot, but it is good. It's very consistently good. It's just, you know, if that's what it is.
Right. No, I just thought that was sort of possibly the last time they were there. Who knows?
Yeah, that was the 2010 two-night run.
Okay.
Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah. So, Andy, you sent me some music so I could study up a little bit on you guys, and you were very gracious to send me a very amazing version of You Enjoy Myself, which I appreciated tremendously, and Maze, and Lizards, and there was one other...
Reba.
Yeah. And oh my God, you got those vocals right.
Reba stuck in a can of lipstick, perfume, fly paper, Reba press a needle to a slide, truss a razor with a prune. Or is it, the needle and the razor is the thing. It's kind of
unbelievable that you guys are able to do it in harmony and perfectly fast. I always marvel at Phish being able to do it.
I mean, yeah, I think last night we did it better than that, so hopefully tonight we'll do it even better.
Oh, you do Reba tonight?
Maybe. I don't know, we'll see.
That was great. And You Enjoy Myself. How do you guys, you know, come up with a concept for the vocal jam, or you just let it happen?
Yeah, we never actually sat down and thought about anything with vocal jams. We just kind of go. And it feels like certain time, like Pope tends to do the beatbox thing, and then other than that, I mean, I don't know. I never really understood what Phish was doing other than just kind of going with it. It's kind of like a type 2 jam, but and it's really cool. I mean, I love doing it.
Well, you can tell when they were in their barbershop.
Oh yeah,
phase. Because everything like resolved on a beautiful chord,
right? Yeah.
But then when they're not in that, it can go very strange places.
Oh yeah, yeah. And we just kind of let it go, like wherever it goes. We have no idea where it's going to stop or anything like that. It just kind of
that's great.
As soon as everybody starts cracking up too hard that they can't make sound anymore, you know.
And so Maze, I was listening to My Words, you know, sort of interpreted once by, you know, Phish, and now by you guys, and it was kind of I was loving it. It was a very good version. Very extremely good version. Where you said that was from Nashville?
Yeah, it was the Exit Inn in Nashville, and that was on the, I think it was the 6th or the 7th of January. It was the last run that we did, the first one of the year, first weekend of the year.
Well, let's hit a little Maze for you guys right now.
The overhead view is a Vietnam Maze. You see what I'm hunting a few steps away. Wrong turn and I'm on the wrong path. The people are watching, enjoy a good laugh. Embarrassed with failure, I try to reverse.
Boom. That's phenomenal.
Nice. Andy, you said that this is your primary band, but you play in others, and all the other guys do, but you also have a day job.
Right.
And I know some of the two of the other guys do as well, right?
Yes.
How do you guys, it seems incredibly difficult to balance between day jobs and all the bands and learning new material and practicing, and is it as crazy as it seems?
In recognition of the fact that we all have day jobs, so a lot of times things get pushed back. If we didn't have day jobs, we could move a lot faster. And so that's really the thing. We can't get stuff done as quickly as we would. Sometimes we're supposed to have a practice on a certain day and something comes up and we can't do it. So then if we're gonna learn a new song, it gets pushed back. So, you know, that there's that aspect of it. Me personally, I work Monday through Thursday and then we usually go on the road Friday and Saturday, like 1 or 2 weeks a month. Sometimes more than that, but not often. So it actually is a nice balance for me. I like it. It doesn't feel like work. It feels like fun. And if it wasn't, I wouldn't keep doing it at all.
What's an example of a goal you guys have like for this year?
I don't know if it's funny. We never really had any goals. It was all, it's sort of always been about the journey and not the, I don't think we have a destination at all.
Yeah.
I think maybe the goal has always just been to have fun.
Yeah.
And as long as we're working in that direction, it's cool. But yeah, that's, I can make something up, but I don't think we have any goals.
Well, that's awesome. Can you tell us about any other bands? Because I know up near us in the Philly area, I think there's a band called the Lawn Boys. Have you heard about them?
I have, because Darren, the guitar player, plays in Equator also.
Oh.
And so I reached out to him before I got mine to ask him about it. And so I know them through that. I've never actually seen them before, though.
Okay.
I saw a live one, I guess it was last week for the first time. Yeah. On, I think they were playing Wednesday night, and I actually played four songs with them at the beginning of the second set, which was really cool.
Two trays?
Yes, and so it was just this, I mean, we opened up the second set with Tweezer, and you know, obviously he and I know the same riff, so it's like, what do you do? So I kind of had to take the role of the auxiliary, like the Bobby
player. Interesting.
And so it was very, I was glad to be in Nashville this, you know, fall to see that, because it kind of helped me like understand like how you could do that within the context of Phish. And it was actually really cool. I really liked it. We did Tweezer, Cars, Trucks, Buses, and then something else after that, and then they were like Susie, and I'm like, okay. And so then Andy Greenberg
nice,
of course. And so so I got Susie.
You never get that joke.
I got Susie. That's never happened before. Yeah.
I actually stumbled upon those guys in Houston. I was there for a wedding, and Rachel, my wife, and I we left the hotel to go looking around. And
a live one.
They were playing at an outdoor venue in Houston, and it was fun.
They were great. I really enjoyed it.
Are you the
really
three
nice
biggest
guys,
would you say?
I don't really know. It's hard for me to say what what big is, what big equals.
Right.
I mean, we play a lot. I know we're the biggest in the South.
Okay.
Or the Southeast. But you know, I don't really see it as any kind of competition. I don't think that that's the spirit of it at all.
No,
For us. And it really it takes away from what we're doing, the fun of it. If you know, so I don't know what the metric is for the biggest.
Well, no, I didn't mean that really. I just meant
it's another business question.
Yeah, I'm asking, how much money do you make?
Yeah, yeah. Well, actually, yeah, we make more than all the other ones. So yes, we're
the biggest.
We're the biggest.
Yeah. No, of course, I meant it in the way like that's cool that there's others out there.
Oh yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
and
yeah.
That you're one of those that's getting recognition.
Oh, totally,
yeah,
totally,
yeah.
And
I love that. And thanks so much. And I just want to. We're gonna go out with the song Lizards. Do you guys do other Game Henge songs?
AC/DC, Bag, Wilson. I'm trying to think what else.
Any of the crazy like Mockingbird, Forbin stuff?
We haven't learned that yet. That's definitely like sort of on the list. Mockingbird is kind of a beast. I've learned it before actually, but a lot of these songs since I was like 15, I would just sort of sit down and try and learn them. So I've worked on a lot of these songs before, so it's really easy for me to pick stuff up. But it is a big ordeal for us, and like you know, we have to put other songs on hold. So it's very difficult to figure out what songs to do next.
Yeah. That one is just so in particular, that one is like. Like keyboards and guitar have to be locked.
Oh yeah. it's like Uncle Pen speed, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, very much so. Are there other songs that are like incredibly difficult that you kind of felt like you achieved an amazing hurdle by you cleared an amazing hurdle by being able to learn them, like It's Ice maybe or Mound or
sure. I mean, really each one sequentially that I've learned over time has felt like that. The first one that I really got into was like Divided Sky, and I think I was probably about 15. And then when I was in college, I tried You Enjoy Myself and I couldn't do it. So I finally got that one down probably by the time I was in dental school actually. Since then, I feel like a lot more comfortable with things. Reba definitely was a pretty monumental one. Although I really love the learning part of it. Right. For me, that's a big part of the fun.
Andy is a dentist. He drills quite a lot.
Yeah. That's what they said.
You're a dentist?
Yeah, I am.
Ah.
Yeah. That's my day job.
Okay. That's really cool. I don't know if I knew that.
Yeah.
That's really cool. Well, we're going to go out with some Lizards, and here's hoping that you play some more Game Henge tonight.
Okay.
And really nice talking to you. Anything else, RJ?
No, this is great. And it's awesome to see you guys and keep doing awesome work.
Thank you.
Thanks so much. Yeah, great to meet you, Andy. And
yes,
really honored psyched
to meet
for the
you.
Show tonight.
Thank you. It's going to be fun.
All right, here's some Lizards. Bye. Runaway Gin.
Lagoon by which she wandered till we reached above the spring.
The night grew very quiet as we stood there. He lifted up his visor and he turned to me and he began to say, he said, I come from the land of darkness. I come from the land of doom. I come from the land of gaming. From the land of the big baboon. But I never ended up going back there. And I couldn't if I tried. Cause I come from the land of lizards. Practically extinct from doing things smart people don't do. He said he was once a lizard too. His name was Rutherford the Brave, and he was on a quest to save his people from the fate that lived before them. Their clumsy head was perilously near. The lizards would be saved, he said, if they could be enlightened by the writings of a healthy, friendly book. In all of Prussia, only one existed. And Wilson had declared that any person who possessed it was a crook. He said, I come from the land of darkness. I come from the land of doom. I come from the land of gaming. From the land of the big baboon. But I'll never end going back there. And I couldn't if I tried. Of eternal joy and never-ending splendor. The trick was to surrender to the flow. Walked along beneath the moon, he led us through the brush till soon. We saw before our eyes a raging river. He said we could swim it if we tried. Saying this, the night dove in, forgetting that his suit of arms would surely weigh him down, and so he sunk. And as his body disappeared before me, bowed my head in silence and remembered all the thoughts that he had thought. He said, I come from the land of darkness. I come from the land of doom. I come from the land of gaming. From the land of the big baboon. But I never ever going back there, and I couldn't if I tried. Whoa, 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 whoa
So much for coming out tonight. We really appreciate it. We'll be back real soon, man. Get home safe. See you next one, maybe.